Live from America's finest city, this is Real Talk San Diego on ESPN 1700.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is your Wealth Hour with Real Talk San Diego on ESPN 1700 AM. Dear co-host,
Karen Cassino.
And myself, Ryan White. This is turning out to be the Woman's Power Hour yet again. We have with us today Janita Wall with an alphabet soup behind her name, right? CPA, CFP, CDFA. She is a certified financial planner, forensic accountant, the co-founder of wife.org, and the originator of the Second Saturday program. Welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Also with us today, Candace Barr, CEA, CDFA. She is with Barr Investment Group. She is an investment advisor. Her website is barrgroup.com, B-A-H-R-group.com. But we are going to put the focus today on the website wife.org. Not to be confused with .com, wife.org. Very clear about that. And that is an acronym for something, right? What is that?
Yes. Thanks, Ryan. This is Candace. It's an acronym for it basically comes from Every Woman Needs a Wife. It stands for the Women's Institute for Financial Education. It is a nonprofit organization that Janita and I co-founded together 26 years ago. We're both financial people, but we wanted to create a place where women could get information that was safe, that was non-commercial, that was easy for them to find. So it's been a passion of ours for the past 26 years.
Say the acronym one more time.
The Women's Institute for Financial Education, wife.org, is our website. We have 35,000 members across the United States, and we do locally here programs that are oriented toward women.
And we're certainly going to talk about the local programs. So, as you might guess, the topic today, financial planning and investing, and the tagline that you two have come up with here, it's more than money, it's your life, right?
Yes. In fact, we wrote a book, It's More Than Money, It's Your Life, because money is intertwined, frankly, with everything that you do. If you really think about it, money has a great deal to do with where you live, what neighborhood you live in, what kind of house you can afford, where your kids go to school often, what kind of medical care you even get. So it's not simply about accumulating money. It's about living a rich life, a life that where money is intertwined, where it makes a difference to you and your family.
And this is Janita. Money is also intertwined with emotions. Very often people think, oh, I don't have enough money, I'm depressed, or wow, I got a great raise, this is a terrific day. So very often there's money, emotion, lifestyle. It's all a part of your life.
And what we found too, I practice in the same area as Janita, and I run into Candace in my practice too, is that these topics affect men as well as women. It affects everybody. It's become more of an interesting topic for men as well as women. And so I know that's why you picked the topics that you picked today, is because it affects everyone.
Right. Absolutely. Again, money is intertwined with our lives. So handling money and understanding how to handle money is really important. And frankly, most people don't learn about money through school or even in their homes. So a lot of times, if you're in a relationship, you think, well, he's handling it. And he might think, well, she's handling it. And maybe one of the important things is to have an honest communication and discuss really who is handling it. And let's work together on this. So it's not just about women. It's working together. If you're in a relationship, working together as a couple.
So one more time, the website is wife.org. And although on there it is directed towards women, mm-hmm. the money principles we're going to cover today are unisex.
Yeah,
they're
absolutely
irrelevant of sexual orientation. So there are three main topics: 7 simple secrets to transform your financial life, 6 savvy tips to spend less and save more, and it's never too early to start planning for your retirement. And Each of those has subsections. So let's start with number one, 7 simple secrets to transform your financial life. You have on here at top of the list, save every month. Yeah. That sounds pretty straightforward, right?
And
but
that's a
people
no,
don't?
Yeah, that's a no-brainer. Yeah, save every month. The trick is in the doing.
Okay.
Because people say, okay, if I have money, when I have money left over at the end of the month, I'll save it. And then there's always something that comes up, either something obligatory or something that's going to be a lot of fun that they need to spend the money on, and they forget to save it. If that goes on month after month, they're going to be in trouble. So my advice is that people save automatically. By that, I mean have the money come out of your account, or even better, out of your paycheck before you even receive it. So one of the best places is your 401k. When you save in a 401k, actually sometimes the employer's matching it, and always Uncle Sam is matching a part of it, because you put $100 into your 401k, it only reduces your paycheck by about $70 because you're not paying the tax on that $100. So that's a pretty good deal. Hey, I'll give you $70 and you put $100 into my account.
Sure. It allows us to essentially take a loan from the government until it's, what, 65, and we have to start taking that money. But the idea would be you're making money on the money. That's a general. So is there a 401k, you know, let's say that they generally range around 5% that most companies kind of cap at, and matching programs are usually capped at something below that for companies. But, you know, that aside, is there a certain amount or percentage one should save?
Well, you should certainly put in as much as you possibly can. The maximum that somebody can put in is $18,000 a year. If you're over the age of 50, you get a little boost and you can add in another $6,000. So that would put you at a maximum of $24,000 a year that you can put in. As you said, most companies will do some matching, usually up to maybe 3 to 5% mm-hmm. of the first amount of money that you put in. And then in that case, they'll put in maybe 50 cents for every dollar you put in. So as Janita said, it's not only that the government is really giving you a pass on this. This is free money that you're being offered by your company. It is absolutely crazy if you do not put in at least to that max that you're going to get from the company. Heaven forbid you need to take the money out, and you certainly may take it out prior to 59 and a half, but you will have to pay your tax on it, and you will have a 10% excise tax on it. But even with that, if you've got the benefit of compounding, you've got the benefit of tax deferral, this is a no-brainer. It's very, very easy. And we call these secrets. Truthfully, they're secrets right out in the open. But Unfortunately, most people are not doing them. So I would encourage anybody at least to do the 401k.
And one thing that I would add is saving really isn't sexy. I mean, there's so many things that you can do with your money besides save it that's a lot more fun. But people should realize that saving buys you freedom. The earlier you save and the more you save early on, the more choices you have when you're in your 40s and 50s and 60s about whether you're going to work at all, how much you're going to work, and how much you're going to earn. So saving really does buy a lot of freedom.
Yeah, that does make a lot of sense. We're talking with Janita Wall and Candace Barr. Their website is wife.org. One more time, that's the website, wife.org. We're talking about, well, in this case, 7 simple secrets to transform your financial life. We've only talked about one of them, but when we come back, we will make an attempt to get through the remaining 6 ahead of us when we come back. ESPN 1700 AM. It's your Wealth Hour with your host,
Karen Cassino,
and myself, Ryan White. We've been talking with Janita Wall and Candace Barr. They are the, well, co-founders mm-hmm. of the website, wife.org. And we are talking about financial planning and investing. More importantly, it's more than money. It's your life, which is also their book, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
One more time, the website, wife.org. We're talking about seven simple secrets to transform your financial life. We kind of touched on the first two. Save money every month and put as much as you can into your 401k or Roth IRA. And so I posed the question, how much is enough? And you mentioned the limits that they have on that $18,000 unless you're over 50, and then it jumps up to $24,000 if you're over 50. So I think what you're saying is you're best to max out that number if you can.
Certainly if you can. But a general rule of thumb is if you're younger, if you're in your 20s or 30s, you can actually save less. A general rule of thumb is to save about 10 to 15% of your income. If you start there and do that on a consistent basis, now if you're in your 40s or 50s, and you haven't been saving all along, you're going to have a lot of makeup to do. Yeah. And frankly, at that point, you're going to need to save probably about 20 to 25% of your income. So that really speaks to people saving early, saving consistently, and investing properly, not waiting.
And it was a no-brainer to at least set aside the amount your employer is matching. I mean, without question, that is it. So in my past life, I was an engineer and I had some amount of matching program and blah, 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 blah. I put money aside and I was limited as to what they've provided me to invest in, which quite frankly got me very soured on the process. I made almost nothing on my investments because I had 10 funds to choose from. I think they were mutual funds at the time. This was 10-15 years ago, but during the break, you kind of mentioned that that's changed a lot. They've really scrutinized that, and that maybe opened up a little bit.
Yeah, what's happened is that most employers were getting some flack from their employees, but also from the government if they were going with a kind of an off-brand mutual fund provider for their 401k that wasn't doing real well for the employees, but the employer was getting a nice fee from it. So what's happened now is most of the employers have gone with known commodities, with a wide range of good funds, companies such as Vanguard or T. Rowe Price or Fidelity, where you can actually invest in a variety of different funds, including a great group of funds that's the target retirement funds, where you can actually, let's say you're going to retire in 2030, you can invest in the target retirement 2030 fund, and that will then be more aggressive in the early years now and calm down to being less risky in the later years.
So it's rebalanced. It's rebalanced actually by the mutual fund company, so you don't even have to think about it. So as you get closer to retirement, you won't have the volatility.
Brilliant.
Which is great. Yeah.
So I have a question. For those listeners who are listening to you going, great, I think that's a great idea and I would love to save, but here's my situation. I am working, I'm paying off credit cards, I don't have extra money to save. What do you say to the people that unfortunately and realistically have gotten themselves into some debt?
Yeah, and that's not an uncommon situation in this day and age, because very often we run out of money before we run out of month, and then we're putting things on the credit card, hoping we can pay it off next month, but next month is the same thing. As Ryan just reiterated early, if you can possibly save at least what the employer's matching in your 401k, that's really going to work well for you, because if you don't save that much, it's like walking by money on the street and just leaving it there and saying, no, somebody else can have that. The employer was willing to give you some money. So my advice is to at least save that amount. If even that isn't possible, at least dip your toe in it. Let's say that your employer allows you to invest a minimum of $25 into the 401k. Invest $25 into the 401k. Then next year, raise that to $50 if you can, and at least get that money building up. Then with your credit cards, get those paid off. Figure out how you're going to pay those down on a systematic basis and do that as well, which probably means tightening your belt for a little while till those are gone, but it's not forever.
So one of the things, Karen, is a lot of people think they don't have the ability to save. They just simply can't. But the truth is, most of us have money leaks of some sort. Do you go to the coffee shop on a regular basis? Are you eating out for lunch? And so if you look at just even saving $5 a day, if you start saving $5 a day when you're in your early 20s, literally, and you're able to accumulate at 8% per year, you get that invested, put it in a mutual fund, put it in a 401k, literally you'll have almost $1 million by the time you're ready to retire. So you don't have to amass this huge amount of money. Incrementally, just a small amount of money really does make a difference.
So we're talking with Janita Wall, who is a co-founder of wife.org, W-I-F-E.org, and Candace Barr, who also is a co-founder of wife.org. And we're talking about 7 simple secrets to transform your financial life. We were just talking about the people that living regular life in San Diego don't have, or at least they don't think they have, the extra money to invest into savings. There are a lot of people with employer situations now who don't have employers that match or even have an IRA to save. So they've got a job, they're living, they're making enough to pay their bills and putting a little bit on the credit card every month. What mix do you think those people should have? Because I know personally a lot of people, a lot of my clients are in that situation. Should they be paying a little bit down on the credit card and saving a little bit? What's your advice on that?
I think that they should be doing both, because saving is a habit. It's a habit that if you get into and you stick with it and you have it happen automatically, you're not going to be thinking about it after a while, and then you can maybe save a little bit more. Spending is also a habit, and a lot of people who do say, I'm going to pay down that credit card, pretty soon they see how well they've done with that, and they reward themselves by charging a few things on the credit card, and then they're back in that cycle again.
You know, the reality is, if you think about the interest rates, and I know you're in the real estate business, the interest rates that people are getting on their home mortgages right now, 3% and 4% and 5%, credit card interest is 18% on average. It is a very inefficient way to borrow money. And for a person, unfortunately, who needs to use their credit card for emergencies, if they can get it paid off as quickly as possible, that's the best option. For those people who borrow, let's say somebody takes a vacation. I deserve a vacation. I work hard. I spend $4,000 on a vacation, and they decide to make their minimum payment. If they make a minimum payment of $100 a month, which is the minimum payment that they need to do, it would take them almost 20 years to pay that off, and they would have paid twice as much as the vacation actually cost them. So credit cards is a last resort, and it's not an efficient way to borrow money.
You have a point down here that says pay your mortgage biweekly instead of monthly. Tell me about that.
A lot of mortgage companies will let you make payments on more often than on a monthly basis. So if you were to take your monthly mortgage payment, let's say it's $3,000 a month, and say, well, I'm paid every other week, so I am going to pay $1,500 a month every other week, you will actually end up making one extra payment every once in a while, which will shave over 4 years off of a 30-year mortgage. So that makes a difference. Now, some people may say, well, I'm never going to have a mortgage for 30 years. I'm in and out of mortgages and in and out of houses. But it helps build the principal faster, too.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Actually, it's something that hits close to home for me. I actually have calculated that and seen many illustrations that 30-year mortgage, of course, we're talking fixed, paid bi-monthly. As you mentioned, you're making 13 full payments a year as opposed to 12 in a normal mortgage, has two effects. One, of course, you're making another payment, but the compounding effect by money being there 2 weeks sooner every time I've seen that bring the 30-year mortgage down to right around 24 years. So,
yeah,
you know, it's 6 to 7. It's a substantial savings. Now, your payment doesn't drop on a monthly basis. It's the duration of time you're paying on the loan. And certainly it drops it quite a bit. Even if you don't have the home for all 23 years, principal reduction is obviously very important.
Right.
That's a huge thing for us.
Another way of saving, really. Principal reduction is another way of saving.
Yeah, there is, and there's a fine line there. So as an example, like I was lucky enough to refinance my home, and I think my rate is, I don't know, like 2.75, right? And of course, we all know that that's a write-off, right? So when in the end it cost me 2, right? So my net feel on that is 2. That's one of the best investments I have. Right? I can add all kinds of money. I can do and make more than 2% elsewhere. So there's a fine line between paying, in my opinion, paying your mortgage off too quickly, because it's wonderful. 2% money is cheap. I can all kinds leverage it to all kinds of other stuff. So I really do think the bi-weekly, bi-monthly would be what you're doing, or every 2 weeks payment is really very smart. Well, looks like we're coming up on break here. We are talking with Janita Wall and Candace Barr. Their website is wife.org, wife.org. Talking about the 7 simple secrets to transform your financial life. We talked about 3 of them. There's a couple more ahead of us. When we come back, we're going to talk about asking for a raise. Sounds like a good idea. Ahead of us when we come back.
Welcome back to Your Wealth Hour here on ESPN 1700 AM with your hosts,
Ryan White
and Karen Cassino. We are talking with Janita Wall, who is a certified financial planner, co-founder of wife.org, originator of the Second Saturday program at MiraCosta College, and many other things that I can't even list all of them, as well as Candace Barr, who is with Barr Investment Group. She is an investment advisor. She is also a co-founder of wife.org and an author, previous on-air talent. These two ladies have so many accolades, I can't even mention all of them. But we are talking right now. I wanted to get into 6 savvy tips for spending less money, because we've talked about saving and how important that is, and investing into our retirement. And so I know a lot of my clients and a lot of my friends are listening right now and saying, I would love to do that, but I don't have any money. I don't have any money left over after I pay for my Nordstrom bill and my tennis outfits and my
Bloomingdale's.
My Bloomingdale's.
And your nails.
And my nails and my hair, sure. and all things that I just mentioned, very important. But what are some of the recommendations the two of you have on a plan to cut back on spending?
Yeah. My recommendation for cutting back on spending is figure out where those money leaks are that Candace was talking about earlier. To do that, some people think, oh my God, the dreaded B word, budgeting. I've got to make up this list of all my different expenditures. You don't really have to do that. A lot of the things you spend money on just are. Your mortgage is your mortgage payment. Your utilities are your utilities. But everybody knows where they have guilty overspending. Maybe it's on clothes. Maybe they're spending too much on eating out. I counseled with one couple. Their Sunday outing was always to CVS, where they bought a bunch of frivolous things that they really didn't need. So that's what you do, is you figure out those leaks where you are spending money. Keep track of those for a month. If you use your debit card, you can go through your credit, through your bank statement, and figure out where that money went. If you spend cash, you can keep a little list in your wallet of where that money went. Then take a look at where you spent that money and figure out what really gave you pleasure on that list and what was just you were spending out of boredom. Keep the expenditures that give you really great pleasure, but the ones where it's just routine, you always stop for coffee in the morning because that's what you always do in the morning, cut that out. Go for a little walk around the park instead. Save that money. Actually, take that money and save it for something you want, like a vacation. Let it build up. And there you've got a good incentive for saving money.
For those of us who do a lot of work in the divorce arena, Janita Wall and I both do that, I know one of the things that happens with people that are going through a life transition, you sit down with them and say, well, what are your expenses? I would say 80% of the people are shocked at how much they do spend and what they spend it on. So it's not only doing a budget per se, but it's really having an understanding what exactly it is you spend your money on.
Exactly right. Yeah, take a good hard look at what you're spending your money on and just start cutting things out. You don't have to cut them out all at once. You can say, okay, I'm going to cut out one or two expenditures every month of things that I don't really need to spend on that aren't really pleasurable for me. And pretty soon you will have things honed down to something that's fairly simple, but not killing yourself, and set the money aside, and you'll start seeing a really nice stockpile of funds.
You know, Karen, I have to say, I also see this as an investment advisor working with people. I try to help them plan for retirement. So often we'll say to people, how much money do you need in retirement? And they'll come up with an idea of, well, I'm not really sure. You know, we probably spend around $50,000 a year. And then we back into that. And I said, well, that's interesting. You make $150,000 a year. And so let's just say you're paying about $30,000 in taxes. That's $120,000. So you must be saving about $70,000 a year, aren't you? No, I don't save anything. Well, then I guess you're not. It's amazing how many people are disconnected with what they spend. And so just doing some of the simple things that Janita said, having an awareness, it really is almost like if you're going to start on a health program or you're going to start on a diet, what's the first thing you have to do? You got to get on the scale. Same thing with this. You've got to figure out what are you spending and where do you want to go with this? And create rewards in there for doing the right thing, too. It's not about austerity and not enjoying your life. It's about spending money on things that are meaningful to you, not wasting money.
We're talking with Candace Barr, who is an investment advisor at Barr Investment Group, and Janita Wall, who is a certified financial planner. Both of them are co-founders of WIFE.org, and that is their website, WIFE.org. My next question would be, you have something down here. Give yourself a consideration period before large purchases. So I know what that means. I am a impulsive car buyer.
Really? Wow.
I don't do it often, yeah. but I don't really think it's impulsive. I do plan in my head for it, and then it just happens quickly, and I come home and my family members go, wait, what happened to your car? But I do think it's important. I know you have some pointers on deciding what level of car you need and should afford, or what level of expenses should you be committing yourself to, you know what I mean? Because there is a level of car that an individual should have. If they're making X number of dollars, they probably shouldn't be driving a Porsche, even though the dealer would probably let them qualify for that. So let's talk about, you know, giving yourself this cool off time period before large purchases and maybe some of the considerations people should be thinking about.
And Karen, I had a friend just like you. We always told him that he must have joined the Car of the Month Club because every month he was driving some different vehicle.
I think, you know, with making a large purchase like an automobile, let's face it, unless it's a collector's car, a car is not an investment. It is a depreciating asset. So looking at what you're really trying to accomplish, in fact, Janita and I on our nonprofit website, our wife.org website, we actually have an article about if you, in fact, don't get a car every 3 years and instead wait for 5 years to get a car, it will make a significant difference in your life because, again, you're not putting out that money. The first couple of years, we all know, when you buy a car is where you get that deepest depreciation. So buying a used car or not buying a car as often can make a substantial difference in your life. So one of the big things is if you have a tendency to be impulsive, is sit down, write down what it is that you're interested in doing and take a look at it. And then if you'd like, find somebody that can go with you, perhaps to temper your enthusiasm. On the other hand, for some people, again, buying a car is not that big of a deal. It's if it gives you joy and pleasure and you have the assets and the ability to do it, it's fine. Which is obviously in your case. It's for those people that are living on the margin and driving a fancy car. A lot of times what we find, because we manage money, is we find people who look on the outside like they have all the trappings of success, but you dig in a little bit deeper, and it's a shallow, very shallow existence. And so it's about having what's important to you, but also making sure you're taking care of your family and your retirement.
We're talking with Candace Barr and Janita Wall. Their website is wife.org, WIFE.org. One more time, wife.org. Talking about the 6 savvy tips to spend less and save more. When we come back, we're going to talk about their advice about not buying the most expensive house they can afford. Naturally, I have an opinion on this. We'll talk about that when we get back. Candace Barr. Their website is wife.org. One more time, their website is wife.org. Talking about the 6 savvy tips to spend less and save smart. And when we came to the end there, we talked about buying the most expensive home you can afford. And it's certainly been my experience that most lenders can get someone qualified for more than they're comfortable paying. Even in our restrictive lending environment, most of the time they can be qualified for more than is comfortable to pay. And I can't think of a single situation where a buyer didn't show up with a pre-approval letter and spend within 3% of whatever that pre-approval letter said. So there is a lot of draw to do that. How does one combat such a thing?
One thing that you ought to think about if you're thinking about buying, wow, that great house, and I can get a big yard and a pool in it, and how wonderful, the kids are going to have such a good time. People forget about the maintenance on all of those things. You're going to be spending all of your time working on the landscaping, or you're going to be hiring a gardener. Mm-hmm. Same thing with the swimming pool. You've got the pool guy coming in. You've got all the chemicals. You've got the skimming and everything. You've got painting it. Same thing with repairs. It's a great house. It's a huge single level expanse. Think of when you need a new roof on that sucker and what that's going to cost. It gets pretty expensive, and people don't think about that. Even the normal utilities to heat and cool the most house they can afford, they'll end up selling that house because they can't afford it.
You know, it was interesting. I saw, this is a little bit off tangent, but it was an interesting study. They did a study of people who purchased the worst house, which we all know is the best thing to do in the best neighborhood. They had the potential to make the most money, but they were actually the unhappiest. And the reason is they did the comparison thing. We're not as good as the Joneses sort of thing. And so it actually had a bearing on their ultimate happiness. I thought that was kind of an interesting thing, but they've got the best investment for sure.
Well, and if you think about what you said earlier, Janita and Candace, you both said earlier that if you're taking money out of your paycheck automatically or taking it out of the account automatically, then in your mind, that money's not available to pay a mortgage or to pay the extra expenses. So if somebody goes into buying a house and says, well, I really have $3,000 a month for a mortgage because they already in their mind are saving $400 or $500. So if they're automatically doing the savings, as you discussed earlier, then they're automatically going to be looking for a lower mortgage. And you mentioned the fact that a lot of the utility expenses and things like that go with a bigger house. I had a question for Ryan, who's a realtor, how often we ask those questions when we're buying a house. I know I did. I wanted to know because I've lived in giant houses with $1,400 a month gardener bills and $800 a month water bills and $600 a month electricity bills. And so I usually ask that question. How often does a buyer, you know, ask those questions? And is that something they should be doing? Because as Janita just said, it's such a big expense.
Well, in the, and, you know, in the track home world, the expenses don't vary that much. You know, pool, of course, is going to be an expense. When you get out into the large estate, I was out looking at one today that was 3 acres. And, you know, that thing changes drastically with respect to, in this case, they had gray water systems and solar and a bunch of other features that assisted with that. But, yeah, no doubt. I mean, especially this last month, I bet there's all kinds of people that had electricity bills well over $2,000 because of the heat. Now, that's infrequent here in San Diego, but nonetheless, it is a calculation that can be put in. And if there are solar features, a lender can utilize the extra income or lack of utilities to assist in qualifying, but not huge numbers there. But before we leave this topic on poo-pooing real estate, I thought I'd back up a second. And as we look at this, we talked about the benefit of investing in your 401k. I'm going to paint a real quick story here because we're running out of time. My parents bought a home 19 years ago, and they rented it to one person. He's a doctor, orthopedic surgeon, and he paid rent to my parents for 19 years. This year, my dad said, hey, let's talk about buying it, blah, blah, blah. He's like, no, I can't afford it. For whatever reason, orthopedic surgeon, you know, that was his whole thing. He's like, no, I'm putting my money in my 401k. And I said, okay, well, let's talk about that. Your 401k, I get it. You're putting your money in tax-free. Makes sense. It's going to grow potentially and tax-free, and you take it out, you pay taxes, right? Let's look at a house. You pay your mortgage, you get a rebate, you get a write-off for the interest you pay. For your primary, you get to sell it for a $500,000 gain because he was married. So two people, $500,000 gain, you get to sell it tax-free. It is not that different than putting money into your 401k. And to your point of forced savings, every lender will let you put it up on automatic payment, right? That's a no-brainer. There are a lot of similarities to investing in real estate as, well, in my case, as primary residence, because that's where a lot of the tax advantage are with your primary residence, the ability to sell without paying taxes. A lot of advantages to going that route with respect to creating wealth and saving money. So before we run out of time, we want to briefly talk about Second Saturday. Tell us what that is.
Second Saturday is a program on divorce at MiraCosta College, where we talk about the legal, the emotional, and the financial aspects of divorce. It's at MiraCosta College in Encinitas on, guess what, the second Saturday of every month. Registration is at the door between 8 and 8:30, and you can attend from 8:30 until 1:30. The cost is $45.
So the next second Saturday is coming up on August 8th. There's an hour. There's all of the people at Second Saturday that lead Second Saturday are volunteer. So there's an attorney that's going to talk about how much, what's a retainer? How long does a divorce take? Can you do a divorce yourself? Then we have a therapist or a psychologist talking about some of the psychological and family issues of divorce. Janita is typically the person who does the financial issues. She'll look at the tax ramifications. What if you keep the house? What if you sell the house to your spouse? What kinds of things do you need to consider? What's a quadro? How do you get money out of a retirement plan? And then we also have somebody who talks about mediation. So the whole idea is in about a 4 to 5 hour period to give people, we have both a program for men and women, to give people the information that they need to go through this, because we've talked about real estate, we've talked about 401ks. Guess what? If you go through divorce, it's going to be the largest financial transaction of your life. Dividing everything in half, it's your divorce. So you need to know what you're getting into.
What a wonderful community service that you two provide. And, you know, it's just empowering the information out. And it is directed towards women, right? It's directed towards women, but certainly everybody's free to attend. Do I have that right?
We have a program specifically for women, but we also have a program specifically for men. There is a program run simultaneously for men. We also do parenting programs from time to time.
And is that SecondSaturday.com to find out both the his and her program? Is that where
yes,
I go?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Got it. So the website, one more time, SecondSaturday.com.
Spelled out. Mm-hmm.
Yes, not too N-D.
No.
S-E-C-O-N-D, yes. SecondSaturday.com. Mm-hmm. And very important, wife.org mm-hmm. are the two websites we're talking about today. We're with Janita Wall and Candace Barr. I want to thank you both for joining us. Very informational. Thank you again.
Thank you. We appreciate being here.
It was great.
Until next week.